Hello, everybody. Hello, Georgians. Hello, global citizens. And most importantly, hello, concerned Americans. Good afternoon, good evening, good night, good morning, wherever you're coming from. I'm coming from Suwanee, Georgia. And my name is Varun Kadathala. Once again, I'm the co-host of the Politician Podcast here with my best friend, classmate, Damien Galvin. Now, myself and Damien created this podcast in order to, first of all, bring in perspective along with facts, because we believe that every single political discussion should start with conversation. And second of all, to look at the past and use the issues of our past to perfect a future that we're all proud of. Now, this podcast today is going to be about the DNC, the Democratic National Convention, the speakers of the DNC, and how they have, proceeded with their points, proceeded with their questioning, proceeded with their reasoning to make Joe Biden the presidential nominee for 2020 and the presidential candidate on the Democratic side. A lot of different perspectives, like we said, along with the facts brought in by this whole convention. We truly hope that you guys enjoy today's episode, and please visit www.politicianpodcast.com for more information, more amazing content. Once again, thank you to our amazing research director, Julia Hartman, our amazing graphics team, Jada Pilling and Yi Shen, for this amazing episode. And as always, thank you to my co-host, Damien Galvin, for an amazing segment. Let's get in with it.
And we're rolling. Okay, hello everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Politician. My name is Damien Galvin, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Varun.
Hey guys, my name is Varun Kadathala. I'm the co-host of the Politician Podcast, here today with Damien Galvin, to present to you guys a lot of issues that we're going to be facing and talking about today in our democracy. And more specifically, there's a very, very special event that's been going on for the past couple of days and is going to be going on until this Thursday. And that's the Democratic National Convention, the DNC. It's going to be going on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday this week from 9 o'clock p.m. to 11 o'clock p.m. You guys are going to be watching this on Wednesday. So if you haven't already seen the DNC, please do watch it tonight, 9 to 11 p.m. Learn about politics. Watch it on Thursday, 9 to 11 p.m. A lot of different perspectives being brought in about our democratic process. I think that it's going to be an amazing opportunity for us to talk about today and also for you guys to watch and gain some perspective on.
Yeah, definitely. Some huge guests that, I mean, I think we'd even hope to have on in the future. Sorry, I was a little bit away from my mic. But no, I mean, there was just some amazing, amazing moments over the past couple. Well, it's been two nights. You know, we're recording this episode actually on the day that it comes out. So this is a first. We've been, our podcast has been very progressive in that sense that we've grown so much. You know, before we hop into everything about the DNC, we've grown so much, and we want to thank everyone that's really, you know, stuck out and has been listening to our episodes. We've been slacking, I think, this past week. I think we've been slacking a little bit. But as you guys would know from our Dr. Bearden interview, which if you haven't listened to, we highly recommend. It's because school has just started. And I think that that's the same for a lot of students across the country. So in school starting, we're trying to get everything fixed, everything figured out. We're trying to see how we can prioritize everything. But I mean, me and Varun, we were dedicated absolutely 1,000% to recording today. We were not going to let this slide. Yeah. So we're here bringing you an episode about something that's very, very important. And that is the DNC. And with that, we're also going to bring you an episode on something that we also think is extremely equally as important, and that's the RNC. But I think the difficulty here, Varun, is trying to remain unbiased. And I don't say it because I have a bias towards the Democratic National Convention, right? It's the Republican National Convention, correct? It is called the RNC, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay, it is the RNC. I didn't know if they called it something
different. You're right. No, you're good. Go ahead.
Yeah, so I don't have a bias towards the Democratic Party in any sense, but what I do have a bias against is Donald Trump, right? I don't have a bias for Joe Biden. I have a bias against Donald Trump. And the reason being is because of even the things that Joe Biden mentioned. It was such an empowering speech, and that's I think where we really wanted to start, and more so because yesterday women celebrated 100 years since they obtained the right to vote.
Right. And that's absolutely incredible. We're going to be talking to another person, a feminist figure, today later on in the podcast. We're going to have our episode turned out this Monday. We're going to be talking to her a lot about feminism and why that's so important in our democracy today. I think you bring up a very good point, Damien. I think I somewhat agree I think that being a Democrat, I am going to have that kind of personal bias. I'm going to be biased towards some party. But I think that the problem right now, Damian, going forward in next week's RNC, Republican National Convention, is the fact that I don't think they can talk about Trump in a manner that is kind of glorifying him. They'll glorify him, but it's not going to be in the best way possible. Thinking about this DNC, they're putting a lot of praise and good words onto Joe Biden. And Joe Biden deserves that because he has been a compassionate person, a good leader, and most importantly, like they said, an empathetic person as Vice President of the United States of America. Now, we can't say the same for Trump, so I think their most effective policy is going to be bashing on Joe Biden, which I hope they do. For their own sake, I hope they do. But the issue is going to be that they're going to be saying these things about Trump like he's a great leader. He has helped us through this virus. And the fact of the matter is that I can't really find a single major piece of legislation that Trump has passed that has helped our democracy rather than hurt it. And that is going to hit. That's going to hit hard next week.
Yeah, and I think what's going to hit harder, and I the question that I have for the RNC is who's going to speak for Donald Trump, right? So we have all right. these amazing people, Stacey Abrams, amazing individuals beyond them, AOC, which we'll talk a little bit later about because I know there was some confusion with her nomination, and that can easily be explained. But we had figures like Stacey Abrams, and all these amazing people backing the president. Now on the other side, who are we going to have? Because we already know there's a Republican coalition against Donald Trump. I mean, look at the amazing things. Yeah, and look at the amazing things that the Lincoln Project is doing, right? Amazing in the sense that they're trying to bring back the old Republican Party, whose values I do stand by, and in certain respects I even align with. But who are they going to bring? Are they, and what are those people that they bring going to say?
And that we have to wait, we have to watch, and we have to see. I think it's going to be interesting to see who they bring next week for the RNC. It's going to be a surprise, and it's going to be hopefully a pleasant surprise for us as Democrats, seeing that they don't bring people who really have honest opinion to share about the president, Donald J. Trump. I think we had a lot of people come to the DNC, we'll talk about this right now as we're going into this discussion, who brought in perspectives from being close to Donald Trump and being supporters of Donald Trump, being in his administration. And they talked about how what he did was just indefensible. And to go up there and to say that this president is a good president, has helped the American people, I think that, first of all, we're going to see through it. You know, you can't be sincere and really hide it as much as, I guess, the best person who hides his sincerity is Donald Trump, my opinion. But yeah, you can't. Definitely. It's very hard to be sincere and to also tell the truth and nothing but the truth. I think what the Democrats have done, and we'll go into this with our discussion on Amy Klobuchar, but I think we should first address the fact of the matter that I think the theme of this first 2 days of the Democratic National Convention has been unity beyond any bounds.
Yeah. I mean, you even saw it on the opening, I guess, if you would refer to it as a ceremony for the DNC, where you saw people, I think it was the national anthem that they were singing, if I'm not mistaken. And it was not white people, just all white people singing right. It wasn't just a black person on the screen with a white person on the next screen. It was the sense of unity because and I think that this was a very, very strong choice and it was very purposeful. So you had different screens, right? You had different screens with multiple people on one big screen. This is probably the worst job that I can do explaining this. But you had different panels of people singing the national anthem. It was all from different
almost
backgrounds.
Like a big Zoom call.
Exactly. Like that's the best way to put it. It's like a big Zoom call of people. And it was symbolic of that togetherness, right? Because if it would have just been, a white person's turn to sing, and then a black person's turn to sing, and then a Latino person's turn to sing, it would have, again, separated those groups into nothing more than a Latino singing, a black person singing, a white person singing. But putting them all on the screen at the same time, it was Americans singing.
Yeah, and Americans united. And that's what we need to see in this next generation of Americans. Americans who believe in a future that is equitable. A future that helps everybody, and a future wherein we, really centralize empathy instead of just, not being sincere. I think that the main purpose of this is going to be to challenge Republicans to do the same thing. Well, because going into next week, we're going to see the RNC. And I don't think there's any way. Well, there is a way, but I don't think it's going to be as efficient of doing so. I think that they're making a statement that the RNC cannot fulfill. It's that it's, first of all, unity. Everybody supports a person who puts aside his personal concerns and he concerns himself with the wishes of the American people. That's unity. And the fact of the matter is that the Republicans cannot, they cannot replicate that, because diversity beyond any bounds has been a centralizing factor of the Democratic Party since the beginning of this new modern liberalism.
Yeah.
And I think that Senator Amy Klobuchar, she really said it best. She had a speech. She said, "Democrats, independents, and yes, many Republicans have had enough of his divisiveness." She was the first speaker in the DNC's convention this year. And she confronted Donald Trump about how he's been dividing Americans across so many lines. And, you know, she said also, I want to bring in one more quote. "Unity isn't about settling. It's about striving for something more. It isn't the end. It's the means. It's how we get stuff done. Unity is about reaching up towards a higher purpose, a better future for all of us." I think that's very powerful, especially coming off of a joke about Donald Trump. What do you think about what Amy Klobuchar said and how it sets the tone for the entire DNC?
Well, you know, it sets a very important tone, because Donald Trump's whole campaign tone, and not only in this election, but in the previous election, and the reason that he won was because of the exact opposite, right? So what he won, the reason that he won was because he was able to conjure up a substantial amount of impressionable voters and scare them. Right. It's what he ran on. He ran on being scared of them. And ironically, it's what the Democratic Party is running on now. It's being scared of being scared of them, if you get what I'm saying, right? So they're pointing out what's the word that I'm looking for? The fact that he cannot unite people, right? His divisiveness. That's the word I was looking for. He ran on divisiveness. Now, whether he knew it or not, I don't know. But you remember, he goes down the escalator. He goes down the escalator and he says, "They're bringing rapists," you know, referring to Mexicans. And then he goes and he says, "I want a Muslim ban." And he was purposely conjuring up people. There's beautiful people on both sides, right? That's not an argument to be had. That's not a conversation to be had. The correct conversation in that sense would have been, there was some horrible people on one side, right? And that side was the racist and the side full of bigots. And on the other side, there were beautiful Americans doing what Americans have always done. That was the correct answer. But in running on divisiveness, you can't answer that. And if you answer like that, then your base is confused and saying, well, aren't we supposed to hate them? So it not only are they being blatant with it, Brune, I don't think that the DNC is being blatant with it, saying, hey, this guy cannot unite us. They're also being very subtle with it, right? If you notice, right, Trump has always had a difficulty, and Trump has always ended his press conferences when he gets a question from a woman. The reason being is because his strategists, and they have admitted this, do not want him to respond to females, because the way that he responds to them is very rude and derogatory. And he is losing the white female vote that he crucially won in 2016.
Yeah.
But what the DNC is also doing, and he fell right into their trap, they had probably the strongest African-American figure of our generation speak in Michelle Obama. And they baited the crap out of Donald Trump. They got the exact answer that they wanted. Because you know what? The majority of people love Michelle Obama. And when you start trash talking a powerful, beautiful, strong woman who also happens to be the predecessor of the first lady, you put yourself in, you know, a very, very, very tough position, because now you're not only losing the white the black female vote, you're losing the female vote, period. Because something that you have to remember is that in Michelle Obama's speech, if I'm not mistaken, she did not mention, in a sense, race as the main point of her speech, but rather it definitely ran, I think, on the stronger side of gender.
Yes, absolutely. I'm going to address a few points that you made over here the past couple of minutes. I think that the idea that Trump has been boasting division and running on the divisiveness of the American people has not been made more clear than it was by Governor Chris Cuomo on the first day of the DNC. Governor Cuomo said that Trump didn't create the initial division. The division created Trump. He only made it worse. And that's something that I've believed in ever since the beginning of the election in 2016. I think that the division was there. Trump did not make the American people more divisive. I think Trump highlighted that division and gave that division a voice. I think that he was elected simply because Republicans and a lot of these people were mad that we had a black man as president of the United States of America. I think that's why he was elected. And the fact is that Cuomo addressed that claim, and Cuomo's whole argument was a big old indictment of the president. Cuomo, and we know this, he's a hopeful for the 2024 presidential election. Hopefully he will run for president. I think it would be an awesome time when I'm a sophomore in college to see Governor Chris Cuomo running for president. That'd be an awesome candidate. But besides the point, Cuomo told the American people that New York beat the coronavirus and Trump did not. So he brought up a very good point. Why did Trump not follow New York's example? Because New York, if you look at it, is going down. It continues to go down, whereas our nation continues to go up. And think about it. It's two opposite ends. Chris Cuomo continues to tell people to stay inside, tell people to wear a mask, tell people to social distance. Our president does the exact opposite. Everything is running in opposite directions. Yeah. And Damien, I think that I'm going to finish here by saying that I agree with what you said about Michelle Obama. I think that, okay, this is a personal anecdote about what happened the first day. Michelle Obama stared in my eyes and looked at me and literally drove me to silence for 20 whole minutes that day. I was talking, I was making breakfast for the next day during that entire night, multitasking, and that speech made me sit down. It wasn't because she was Michelle Obama. Trust me, it was not. It was because of the passion she had in her voice, the inflection she had in her voice, and how dynamic she was. You could see her almost on the verge of tears. You could see her as passionate as a person comes. You could see her as a mother. You could see her as a first lady. And most importantly, you could see her as an American citizen in that speech.
I think the word that you're looking for is polarizing.
Yeah.
It was, it stopped. It was almost, in a sense, as it felt like the whole world did stop, right? And if it didn't stop in that moment, it stopped the next morning when it was still trending on Twitter. And the only thing that stopped it was the hatred that came from Donald Trump. And it didn't stop it, right? It fed into it. And I think that they're being very smart. And I think that the DNC is playing this extremely, extremely, extremely skillfully. You know, we always think of a game of we think of the game of politics as emotions in 2020. We have to remember that it is a strategy. It is a huge game of strategy. And as we talked on the podcast with Pulavi, strategy makes up a lot of it. You know, and fortunately for her, she's getting paid for it. But strategy makes up a huge part of it, right? And strategy makes up a huge part of everything. So the interesting thing is that Donald Trump's strategy has been changing, and it's almost had to make a full 180, right? Because you had, at the beginning of his presidency, you had an African-American president, right? You had this sense of unity with a big sense of discontent on the other side, right? Yeah. You had discontent, like you said, for that African-American president, right? And whether it was subtle or not, who knows? But you also had Hillary Clinton running, who had her flaws and who had her run-ins. The difficulty here is that it was crooked Hillary, right? It was crooked Hillary, crooked Hillary. Now all he has is Sleepy Joe, right? Yes.
Sloppy Joe.
Sloppy Joe.
Sloppy, Sleepy, whatever it is.
Sleepy, whatever he goes, whatever he goes for it. It's Sleepy Joe and phony Kamala, right?
Yeah.
So the interesting thing is that he had a very, very, very good point, right? He had a very good point with Hillary. Her emails were fishy, right? Her emails were skeptical. On the same side, though, Trump's interactions with the, you know, with Russia were also skeptical. They were very interesting, to say the least, right? But Hillary had it worse. Right, Hillary had it worse. Hillary had the worst of it.
Hell, she was under. I think that what pushed her over the edge is the fact that she was under investigation by Comey.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So that attributed to it. But what are you going to say for Joe Biden? That he forgets a word every once in a while? I don't know if you listened to how, what was it? Trump said fatalities. Have you seen that clip?
I don't believe I had.
Oh my God. Let me see if I can pull it up on YouTube. I know this audio might sound bad, but I think everyone needs to hear it.
Yeah.
And then how he said, oh my God, I don't even know how to say it. Is it? Well, it's,
you have to. Yeah.
It's Yosemite, ahead. Right?
Yosemite is how you actually say it.
Okay. Yes. What did he say? Yosemite?
I think he said Yosemite. Like every fifth grader in the mob said Yosemite. Trump said Yosemite. Our president said Yosemite. Our president doesn't know the Pledge of Allegiance, man. It's. But besides the point, I think that Republicans, since the beginning of the modern Republicanism, conservatism, that is, have played upon the fact that candidates are, for example, part of a minority community, are women, you know, are people of the LGBTQIA status. The fact of the matter is they play upon divisiveness. Now, the issue right now is that Joe Biden is an old white man, mm-hmm. right? I think that the point they're trying to make is very, very, is not very skillfully made. Yes, Joe Biden forgets things, but is Joe Biden apathetic? Of course he is. Joe Biden, and they made this very clear, the DNC, I think one of the most strong things that they did. So I'm going to introduce this topic and we'll continue it later on. I did want to make sure to introduce the topic of the first night was about Joe Biden and how he was as a person, his empathy, his just how, you know, how good his heart was. Because I truly believe that Joe Biden has a good heart. Joe Biden has a heart that cares about the American people. And they made that very, very clear on the first day of the DNC by talking about his relation to workers. They brought in people from bus lines, bus drivers. They brought in elevator workers who've taken pictures with Joe Biden. They made it very clear. Now, the second night was also very purposeful in saying that Joe Biden is a fighter. They brought in Joe Biden. They brought in his kids. They brought in facts of the matter that Joe Biden lost his first wife, lost his daughter, lost Bo Biden. He lost a kid. So Joe Biden is both an empathetic man. He's a strong man. What more do you need?
Well, you see, the interesting thing, right, is that they're saying that he's looked adversity in the eye and spat in its face multiple times, right? He has, as Joe Biden said, he buttoned up his shirt, he put his shoulders back, and he walked out 4 days after his son died of brain cancer, right? Then on the other side, you had, I think, Senator Chuck Schumer, if I'm not mistaken, right? Where he said, Trump has taken America. And like everything else that he has taken in or that has been given to him, he made it bankrupt. And that was, you know, Chuck Schumer might be overlooked, right? He might be overlooked, or his, you know, his speech be overlooked, because I don't know, not, you know, I don't know.
With I don't all think due it respect, is. I think
with all due respect to Chuck Schumer, just off, like he offsets me a lot. I feel like he's not very good in front of a camera. I cannot attest to him being a good senator. I don't know. I'm sure that he's a good and amazing person, but his presence on camera, I don't think that he's a very camera person, camera oriented person. He seems very awkward on camera, but either way, he says like everything else, you know, he says Joe Biden, you know, the whole momentum up until that point was Joe Biden, his, you know, his first wife died. And his daughter died in the same event, right? So he comes and he pieces back together this amazing family that has gone through all this adversity. He, you know, he says that Joe Biden is sent by his previous wife, right? To his children. He knows what to say to make everyone feel okay. And then his son dies. And 4 days later, he rolls back his shoulders and he goes out and he goes and he serves the American people like he's always done. On the other hand, at the exact same, almost the exact same time period, you have Donald Trump being born, right? You have Donald Trump being given a lot of things. And every time he is given something, it goes bankrupt and it goes broken. So while you have one man fighting to piece everything together, you have the other man destroying everything, right? You have one person who has to find all the Lego pieces. Right? Find all the Lego pieces and then build it. And then you have the other person that's given the kit, the instructions, and still manages to break it.
Yeah. Never thought of it that way. I never thought of it that way. I think that you brought up a very good point, Damien. the fact that I think that there's a huge contrast between what you can say about the current president and what you can say about our next president. Because there's a simple kind of good feeling about earning what you get. And I'm not saying Trump hasn't. I think that Trump has had certain things given to him, but Joe Biden has had so many things taken away from him. And him being on this stage today is a testament to who he is. Now, to your previous point about him coming back 4 days after his wife died, Joe Biden came back. But Joe Biden did not come back the same person he was before. Now, I think that what happened in 2016 was Joe Biden would have ran. He would have ran. I think that he genuinely would have ran for president. But Beau Biden's death took too much of a toll on him to where he could not run. Now, on the other hand, you have Trump's brother dying. You know, I think Trump has two brothers. I know one of his brother died from very recently, last week, I believe.
Yeah.
One of them died before from alcoholism.
Yes.
The one who died very recently, we had Joe Biden come out. And I saw this on Twitter and I was like, what the hell, man? Joe Biden came out and tweeted, our best condolences to the Trump family for the loss today. And what Trump did, I think minutes later, was not even acknowledge his brother's death. And people deal with grief in different ways. I get it. But he acknowledged the fact that Fox News was skewing their data results and becoming more like CNN. And I was like, you didn't even acknowledge this. And you go back to your own talking points like nothing happened. Never mentioned. I don't think he took a break. And I think that that's because he has it's a testament to how little empathy he has in his heart. And you look at who Joe Biden is as a person. And you have to know that no, he may not come off as the most strong person. He may not come off as the most articulate person. But he comes off as a person who cares about you. And I think perhaps most importantly, he comes off as a person that you can relate to. Your old Uncle Joe. And that trumps exactly what Trump's doing.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And I think something interesting. Sorry, I'm trying to find a tweet here. So if I get a little bit disoriented, that's why. I'm trying to find a very interesting tweet. But what I was going to say is something that I think was pretty cool was that Joe Biden owns a Corvette, right? And he went on a show and he shows off his Corvette. And, you know, I'm a car guy. And I think that it's very interesting how relatable he is and how he talked about how he would speed and how he loved driving fast. And he talked about a lot of different things. And it was a manual Corvette. And it was very, very cool to see something so relatable. And you can kind of see the person behind the politician, right? And that's what we kind of try to do here on Politico. You try to see the person behind the politician. But the difficulty is when you're in, I feel like if we had Joe on the podcast, right, Joe Biden, he would, you know, he'd come and he'd talk, right? But if you have Trump on the podcast, he comes and he presents, right? He comes in with his talking points and you're not really seeing him. You're seeing what he wants the other people. He's more worried about what other people see, right? So the tweet that I was trying to find, I couldn't find it, but the tweet that I was trying to find was Trump said, the Obama Biden, all capital, I think one word, if I remember the tweet correctly. It was definitely one word. I don't know if it was all capital, but the Obama Biden administration had one of the worst response to the pandemic. Look at the poll numbers, right? And then he said something about how his pandemic's better, right? And the thing is, you know, why bring up.
If I may add, before we continue here, the DNC speakers talked a lot about how Obama and Biden handle a pandemic that didn't develop into what we had right now. But go ahead.
Yeah. Well, the thing is that Trump said they lucked out or something. They lucked out. I don't remember the exact reason that he said that they lucked out, but he said they lucked out. Why do I get perpetrated so bad? Obviously not perpetrated. That's way too big of a word for him. But why do I get shown so bad in the fake news media, right? That was his response. The whole tweet again being the Obama-Biden administration had such a bad response to their pandemic. Why am I – they got lucky because the media didn't play against them. That was his argument, right? So they had a bad response, but the media didn't show it. And now that he's having a bad response, the media does. And then he says, like, why is the media so unfair, right? And Bo the Fifth Column, who's a YouTuber that, you know, we're planning to have here on the podcast hopefully in the future, he brought up a very interesting point that's like, well, the difference is about 160,000 lives. But you're worried about poll numbers. Right? Because he didn't say, look at the deaths. He said, look at the poll numbers. right? And why is it always poll numbers? When his brother died, he wasn't worried about his brother. He was worried about the poll numbers coming out of Fox News, right? When his older brother died, you know, tragic story. And you know, I can't speak for, again, how people grieve, sorry. But he was happy because that meant that the business would be going to him, right? And one thing that you have to acknowledge, though, and one thing that I've always idolized the president for, this president, that is the fact that when his brother died, he promised to never take another sip of alcohol. And as far as I'm concerned, he has not. So you can obviously see that it did affect him. But I don't know if he's ever donated to, you know, to alcoholism or to prevent alcoholism, or if he's ever met with alcoholics. Right. Or if he's ever made a preposition to try to make, you know, alcohol abuse more difficult. He made one promise, and I think it's the only promise that he's ever kept.
I think you're right. I think, okay, first of all, to begin with, I respect him for, you know, standing from alcohol, for drinking sparkling water, sparkling soda at any conventions, any summits that they have for president. So I think that I respect him for that. The fact of the matter is that when you're looking at Trump and who he is as a person, what comes to mind is performative. And even in instances like these, what he does is more performative than what actually meets the need. For example, the war on drugs, just a policy to give an example for. What they did was they arrested more people as a performative thing, but they never interpreted or incorporated rehab programs to help the people get out of jail and to help the people become have a better future trajectory. It's all performative. I think that what you're saying about Joe Biden being more coming off as more of a family person, more of a homely person during his interviews and his speeches, I think you're right. But I do think that Trump scripts his speeches very much. And I say this because he writes them based upon what he thinks will gain him attention. Everything is a performance for Donald Trump. And I think that even when he makes a mistake, mistakes are good, they're bad publicity for him, but it's good trouble that he's getting in for himself. And I'm not saying that in the way that, you know, John Lewis said good trouble. God forbid I'm saying that. I'm saying that it is trouble that gets him in the news. And that, I think, is one of the main reasons for why he won in 2016. Now, one of the things that I wanted to bring in before we have a time frame here, so I want to bring in as much as possible from the DNC. But one of the things that I saw was that what set this DNC first day apart from anything that I've seen before is Bernie Sanders. And that's because, if you remember, Damian, in 2016, Bernie Sanders' endorsement of Hillary Clinton was not an endorsement. Bernie Sanders' endorsement of Hillary Clinton was talking about his poll numbers, was talking about exactly why he should have been picked for president and why Hillary Clinton was not a legitimate nominee, which I agree with. I think that the DNC had a part to play in making her president or the nominee, but that's beyond the point. Mm-hmm. What happened this year was that Bernie Sanders, unequivocally, you could see it in his face, you could see it in what he said, never mentioned the poll numbers. Bernie Sanders unequivocally placed his backing behind Joe Biden, and I can't even stress how much that means, because half the party is basically Bernie supporters, and half the party in 2016 felt betrayed by the DNC. Mm-hmm. And Bernie coming out today and not exhibiting the same hostility he exhibited in 2016, it meant a lot.
Yeah, and it meant a lot. And, you know, I think that the best thing to do right now after bringing that up is obviously to explain what AOC did. AOC was the second to endorse Senator Bernie Sanders. Senator Bernie Sanders for president, right? And it's ceremonial what she did, if for those that don't understand. She does not actually believe that Bernie Sanders is going to win. She knows that Bernie Sanders is not going to win. But because Bernie Sanders got 300 delegates, they're required to have endorsements, right? Or it's ceremonial for them to have endorsements. Required is a bad word.
Yeah.
It's a ceremonial for people of the party to endorse them. So in a show of unity, she was the second one to endorse Senator Bernie Sanders. To make that clear again, if Bernie Sanders had not met the 300 vote threshold, she would not have endorsed him. She would have endorsed Joe Biden. And to make that even more clear, her role on the DNC, if you look, because DNC has who they're going to speak or who's going to speak, right? On the days before, her role was literally to endorse Bernie Sanders. She was asked to. She was asked to endorse Bernie Sanders. I'm sure she didn't fight. She didn't throw a tantrum. She was like, oh no, blah, blah, blah. No, like, no. Obviously, I'm sure she loves Bernie Sanders, right? But her job was definitely to endorse Bernie Sanders. And I think that endorsement, even again, it showed more unity, right? Because I think that there was some confusion in the moment from a lot of people that didn't understand it and a lot of people that hadn't done their research and kind of just went with it. And people were mad and saying, oh, blah, 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 right? But I think that after it clarified, it was kind of like an awe moment, right? Like when you get mad and then you realize why someone did it, it's kind of like an awe, like that's sweet. And the way that I don't know, it feels like a sense of brotherhood, right? Being demonstrated between Joe Biden and Bernie Sanders. It feels like an, I got your back, you got mine. And that was in the joint,
it really does.
In the joint bill that they proposed, right? I think that was the police brutality bill, if I'm not mistaken. That Trump said for like 6 months he was trying to defund the police and trying to get rid of all the police stations. But on that note, right, on this sense of unity, on the sense of brotherhood, you cannot forget to acknowledge Kamala Harris, right? I think I've only mentioned her name once in the pod. I think her name has only been mentioned once this whole episode, and that was me calling her phony Kamala. So you definitely have to mention Kamala Harris. And in mentioning Kamala Harris, you have to remember this, and you have to remember something that's very strong. She's not just an African-American woman, right? I think a lot of times people forget that she is also half Asian-American. I think Pulavi makes this very apparent in all of her Twitter posts, and I think that it's something a moment of pride for all Asian-Americans. Just as it is a moment of pride for women, and it is a moment of pride for African-American women, right? And people of all mixed races and minorities. But what you also have to remember is if you want to talk about law and order and you don't mention Kamala Harris's name, Jesus worry, Christ, Kamala Harris's name, that's one for Trump if he wants to use that one. I'll give him that one for free.
Kamala Harris.
Yeah.
God. Oh, wow. Wow, yeah, man. Just got I did it? Not realize. I apologize. Just... I did not mean it that way. Absolutely not. Okay.
Yeah,
go ahead,
No, I am so sorry. That was literally me just having a Joe Biden moment and just mispronouncing her last name.
I have one there as well. I'm sorry. I know what I just said, but go ahead.
Kamala Harris. Harris. If you want to talk about law and order, you have to mention her name, right? And I think that it was a very distinctive pick on purpose, because if you want to talk about a prosecutor that kills, you have to talk about Kamala Harris, and kills in the sense that she was a damn good prosecutor. And if you want to talk about someone that passed bills that put a lot of people in jail that some would argue should have been in jail, you have to talk about Joe Biden, right? So it's very weird because Trump can't run on the platform that he's like, oh, he put thousands and thousands of people in jail. And then say, I'm the president of law and order. It's like, doesn't really make sense because, you know, kind of law, part of law and order is the law part, and that's jail. And, you know, so it makes his law and order presentation a lot weaker. And something that I wanted to ask you for clarification on, Brune, was didn't the Trump, both Ivanka and Donald Trump, donate to Kamala Harris in her run for prosecutor of LA?
Think they did.
They donated about $3 million.
Kamala Harris and Hillary Clinton. I believe they did.
That's
I'm going to check
crazy.
My facts right now.
Yeah, yeah. We need, you know, we need to get a fact checker. We need to have someone on the call with us. We always,
I don't want
to. We need to be like, you know how Joe Rogan has a, I think it's Jamie. He's like, hey, Jamie, Google it. So we need to have someone. We need to just have someone Googling for it.
Well, I'm Googling it right now if y'all can hear my keyboard.
Varun, our fact checker.
Yes. Yes, he donated to Kamala Harris's campaigns twice.
Yeah.
In 2014.
Yeah, and then I think Ivanka herself donated $1 million as well. $6,000,
Damien. $6,000.
Okay. So I'm inflating the numbers here. Okay, so let's dial it back. still a substantial, donation.
A penny. That's a little penny.
Yeah, but still, I'm not gonna personalize this, but you know, if Trump was running, I wouldn't give him a penny. You know,
I wouldn't give him. Well, that's $6,000, no matter how you put it.
Exactly.
$6,000 is a, I mean, I would say an enormous sum of money for myself. Obviously, Trump is a mogul.
Well, $6,000 is half of what it takes you to be recognized as a candidate. So, if you want to put it that way, I think it's $10,000 is the threshold that you need to be on a bill. Or to be on the ticket. The ticket. There you go. Yeah. So it was half of that. So, you know, Trump paid for half of her election, if you want to put it in those terms. Again, don't misquote me. He paid for half of her being on the ticket. I'm not saying that he funded half her election, but he did make a substantial donation, and $6,000 is substantial. And you have to wonder, if he doesn't like her and she's so phony, why did he donate so much money? I don't know. It's very odd, and we have to see how these next 2 days are going to progress. But I think that the unity is undeniable. I think that the sense of unity is undeniable throughout the American people. And I think that just I guess another point that we can bring up, if we want to talk about divisiveness, you know, we have to talk about, and I don't know why, but every time after we're done making an episode where we kind of like bash Donald Trump, I always feel bad. And I feel bad because it's not, I feel bad because I feel like I'm going to be misinterpreted as saying that I hate Republicans. Right. When on our podcast, the whole point of the podcast is to create conversation and to have that sense of unity. But I don't like Donald Trump. Right. And if you do, that's your opinion. But I don't like him. And I think he is the only person, you know, if you notice, I don't speak very, you know, I'll speak highly of Bush. You know, I would speak in the same sense that I'm speaking right now if it was Biden versus Bush. I think I'd speak in the same sense that I'm speaking of Biden. I don't speak very highly of Biden. You know, I don't kiss up to Biden. I'm not saying, oh, he did this, he's the best, he's the one that can unify. I think that he's a good man, and I think that he's the right person for the job because of the circumstance right now. I would have much rather had Andrew Yang, but I would have much rather had Andrew Yang post the whole thing that's going on. I think right now we need a politician. Yeah. And I think that Joe Biden is just a politician. He's just, that's exactly what he is. He's a basic politician, and there's nothing wrong with that. He knows how to politic. He's good at it. But again, on this front, I don't hate Donald Trump. I don't hate him as a person. I don't think that he's the best person, but I do despise him as a president. I do despise him as someone that's been hateful towards me, towards my family, towards my dad, towards my neighbors, towards the 160,000 of my fellow Americans that have also died, towards his brother, right? I think that there has been hatred that goes around, and hatred has to be met with love. And I think that the DNC is trying to do that. But I guess the next point here, you know, obviously we're trying to do a DNC special, but we cannot overlook what happened today in Trump trying to cancel Goodyear Tire. I don't know if you knew what happened. Do you need me to explain the situation to you?
Yes, please.
So please basically, no worries. I walked upstairs and I was using the restroom, and I heard, I think it was either Fox News or CNN or MSNBC. I don't listen to MSNBC, so I'm not even gonna lie. So it's either CNN or Fox News that talked it on. And it was talking about how Goodyear, right? Goodyear tried to cancel, or Donald Trump tried to cancel Goodyear. So I went on Twitter and I followed up on it. And so basically what happened was, sorry, just to go a little bit back on what CNN was saying. They were saying that the Republicans are always against cancel culture, and cancel culture is an idea of the liberals, but yet Republicans are always the one that kind of provoke it, in a sense. They're the ones that like enjoy it the most and benefit the most out of it, benefit the most out of cancel culture. It was a weird statement, but I completely understood what they're saying, and it is true. But either way, to go back to my point about what happened with Goodyear. Goodyear allows their employees to wear Black Lives Matter t-shirt and LGBTQ+ t-shirts, but bans anything related to presidencies on both sides, and particularly MAGA hats, Blue Lives Matter t-shirts, and several other all lives matters. It was MAGA hats, anything related to MAGA. It was Blue Lives Matter, and it was All Lives Matter, right? They banned it. And Trump saw it as a personal attack onto him. So what Trump said is, man, I can pull up this tweet too, and this one I'll find right away. He said, God, this man tweets a lot.
I'm going to address this.
Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead while I find this tweet.
Yeah, preemptively. First of all, Goodyear has every reasoning and right to do so. First of all, Blue Lives Matter is not valid. Police officers hold their jobs for half a day. They don't live. They can leave their jobs whenever they want. They can't. Black people can't dye their skin. I mean, it's just you can't defend Blue Lives Matter. And MAGA, first of all, I agree. It is a presidential campaign. If they don't want presidential politics involved, then outlaw MAGA. That's okay. Now, the issue is that LGBTQIA is not related to a political party, though it may seem like it is today. It is not. LGBTQIA rights is a fundamental human right of the American people, I think. I think that everybody should think that. And that's not a partisan issue. Now, Black Lives Matter is not a partisan issue either. And that has been made to seem like a partisan issue because of the fact that polarization, party polarization, has made Black Lives Matter an issue like that. Whereas Black Lives Matter, all it's saying at the most fundamental level is that a black life matters.
Well, you see, go ahead. I was just going to say that the issue is I 1,000% agree with you. Right. I 1,000% agree with you. And there's going to be people that disagree and say that saying Blue Lives Matter is very important. Blue lives isn't a race, as it's been argued on Twitter. Blue lives is a job, and a black life can be a blue life, but a blue life can never be a black life. Right. If you understand what I'm saying. Yeah. So that's the argument to be had there. And that should be just be shot down instantly. All Lives Matter is a protest to my protest. And in the words of Joyner Lucas, what type of S is that? So, you know, it's a protest to something saying that a black life matters, which you should not protest to any lives mattering. And if you're going to say all lives matter it's a counter protest to your protest. So it's very redundant. It's very redundant. If you're protesting that black lives matter by saying all lives matter, then all lives apparently don't matter. But the next and the final point is that, first of all, they wouldn't allow a MAGA hat if it was blue and it was for Joe Biden, right? The reason that they don't allow it is because that's their policy. Okay. Second of all, and that's not the issue. The issue here isn't what Goodyear's doing at all. Goodyear could be banning MAGA hats, and Goodyear could be banning MAGA hats and promoting and endorsing Joe Biden. And that shouldn't be an issue, right? That shouldn't be. They're a private company. The issue is that Donald Trump is going after a private company for not endorsing him, which is a direct use and abuse of power. He said, do not buy Goodyear tires. You can find cheaper and better stuff elsewhere. Next time you need to buy tires, do not buy Goodyear tires. He effectively boycotted. And let me remind you, Goodyear isn't a Chinese company. Goodyear isn't a German company like many tire companies are. Goodyear isn't Italian. Goodyear isn't, you know, from the UK. Goodyear is an American company. Right. And I mentioned this, and I think, I don't know if you remember this, Varun, where Trump, you know, in his whole Tulsa parade, he said that he tried to finesse Boeing out of $1 billion. And so I was like, oh, that's good. He tried to finesse a Chinese company out of $1 billion. So I Google where Boeing's from, and it's an American company. Right. So it's like, why not just pay the $1 billion that Boeing wants to build you your, I don't know, big private airplane, right, that the president uses? So why not just use – he was like, oh, I'm trying to save the American people money. It's like, yeah, but indirectly you're also affecting one of the biggest companies and the biggest airplane company that provides jobs for not only people that build the airplanes but people that fly them and people that, you know, manage airports. And if they can't effectively build airplanes and the biggest airplane company goes down, then a lot of people lose their jobs. So you're also costing the American people a lot of money. But that's neither here nor there. So I laughed at it and I was like, okay, it's accidental. There's an argument to be had that he is saving the American people the taxpayer money, right? He doesn't want to waste $1 billion on an airplane and people are going to say, oh, he just wants the airplane for him, which would have been an argument. And that's what CNN would have said. I do not disagree with that. If he would have paid $4 billion, if he would have paid $2 billion, if he would have paid $50,000 to buy an airplane that the president can use, the left would have come for him, right? But the issue here is that there's a company that has a centrist policy that affects or promotes neither one side or the other. But since it effectively does not promote Donald Trump's side, he goes after it and their stocks have plummeted today. Their stocks have absolutely plummeted because of the fact that the president went after it. So it is sad and disheartening to see the president of the United States go after an American business.
Well, the Republicans place themselves as people, the preservers of free marketism or capitalism. The real issue is that we have a president who doesn't respect the normal flow of the market, the free market. And that's what I see is the major issue. We're talking about an interference of private companies, of people making money. Now, you can have your own opinions as president. Be my guest. But when it interferes with private companies who you have vowed to support, you are basically just disbanding your mission. Now, I don't care what the company does. You have a responsibility. You pledged your responsibility to the American people. You pledged your responsibility to God. And I think that doing so hurts the American people at the end of the day and may lead to more outsourcing of jobs, of products. Mm-hmm. They're going to lose money. We're going to lose American jobs. The chain of command goes downwards. And that's what I see as an issue. Now, I do think that we should end the podcast soon. So I did want to bring up one big topic before I have to go. I do have a personal thing to go attend to. For today, I'm going to be transparent with our guests. But our last thing that I think we should consider, Damian, is Joe Biden. Joe Biden talked on day two of the DNC. Joe Biden talked about who she is as an educator, as the former second lady, sorry about that, of the presidency of the United States of America. She talked about who her husband is, what she's been through in life, and why she thinks her husband would be the best pick for president of the United States of America. What did you think about Joe Biden's speech and what the response you received?
Joe Biden, her speech was that of a first lady. And I don't say this as a disrespect to, I know this may seem very odd, but I always get Ivanka. Ivanka is Donald Trump's
Melania.
Wife. Melania Trump. Okay.
Melania is the wife.
You have to remember the president's had a lot of wives and he has a lot of kids. So if I mess it up, that's why. But, you know, I also don't know Joe Biden's first wife's name. So again, that's neither here nor there, though. Melania Trump, I don't think that she's ever made a speech so powerful, right? I think her most powerful speech was copied by Michelle Obama, copied from Michelle Obama.
I want to see if she does that next week, just for the record.
Yes. We have to compare these speeches, right? And we have to see what the power is. But the thing is, I don't think Melania has ever come out and said, Donald Trump is the man for the job. Donald Trump has done this and that. I don't think that there's much that she can attest to him, right? There's not much good that she can attest to him. If I'm not mistaken, Joe Biden was married in 87, right? Joe Biden has been married, I think, to one woman longer than Trump has been married to two of his wives combined, of his longest relationships combined. And the only reason that, again, he is married, the only reason that Joe Biden is even married to two women is because his first wife died. So, you know, you question, it was funny because, you know, obviously Trump came after Biden's religion and Biden has obviously, in that sense, he's been a huge testament to his religion and him not divorcing his wife, especially in being a Catholic. But one thing that I wanted to kind of just bring up on the last topic, and I think that she had an empowering speech and I'd love to hear your opinion, but I just wanted to say this really quickly. A Continental AG is the biggest tire producer. They're a European company. Bridgestone is below them. That's Japanese. Michelin is below them, European. And then it's Goodyear. Right. So Goodyear is the fourth biggest and they're a United States company. So Donald Trump is, instead of promoting the Goodyear, you know, to be the best, He has brought down their stock effectively today.
Well, that's not just Goodyear. That's promoting the American basically tire company to the front lines, and he's basically bashed upon the American tire industry.
Yeah, exactly. And not only that, but you have to also remember, when you produce a car out of Detroit, you want that car out of Detroit to have tires on it that are, you know, produced right next door. So now if Ford is partnered with Goodyear and Ford is going to look bad because of it, who do you think, you know, Ford's going to choose next? They're not going to choose Cooperstone or a Cooper, whatever, the next tire company, the next biggest American tire company. No, they're going to go to someone that's better. They're not going to, you know, go worse. So they're going to go to a European company, or they're going to go to a Japanese company. But you know, in the words of the president, it is what it is. So we're just going to have to see how this plays out. I want to thank you, Varun, for joining me for another amazing episode. I want to thank all of our listeners for tuning into another episode of Polititeen. Please be sure to check out our Patreon, and be sure to tune in this Friday. We're going to have the second part, kind of, you know, wrapping up the DNC. Next Wednesday, we also should have the RNC, if I'm not mistaken. And that ties into Friday as well, another two-part series. Monday, we're going to have Summer Jackson, who is a student at MIT. It's going to be an amazing episode, and we hope that you guys all stay tuned. We're gonna have some big adjustments and some big changes coming up here in the future, and we're gonna try to bring out the best content for you guys. Now that everything's getting settled down and everything's getting situated, I think that we're going to be able to do this effectively. I don't think I've been this excited, Varun, to see the podcast progress as since we started. Right. I am extremely excited right now, and I'm extremely I want to put my head down and get to work and create content for you guys. And more importantly, have conversations that you guys can listen and relate to. But with that being said, be sure to check out our Patreon. It's patreon.com/PolititeenPodcast. Check out our website. You know, you can also donate from there. That's PolititeenPodcast.com. Check out our Twitter. I think that's Polititeen Show. Varun's always the one that does this, so I'm kind of stealing your spotlight a little bit. But I'm learning the handles, guys. I'm learning the handles. It's Polititeen Show, and I think our Instagram as well is also Polititeen Podcast. Is it Polititeen Show? Okay, Polititeen Show.
Our socials are Polititeen Show.
There you go. There you go. That's perfect, something I should know.
Hey, and you know, great job to I think myself and Damien. I think I'm patting myself on the back by saying great job. But great job, Damien.
Thank you. Great job, Varun.
I think that we can continue from here, become a better podcast, and become more active citizens, have better conversations. Our conversations are continuing to grow as our podcast is. So continue to listen to our conversations, and we'll continue to make them and continue to donate so that we can make our initiative much more widespread and reach more people. But that said, I do want to thank you, Damien, for joining me today, as you always do. And see you guys next Friday, I believe.
Sure.
Hello, everybody. Thank you so much for listening to today's episode of the Polititeen Podcast. If you enjoyed our conversation, head on over to www.patreon.com/PolititeenPodcast for more exclusive members-only content, special episodes, and merch drops. That is, once again, www.patreon.com/PolititeenPodcast. I'm going to make it a jingle when I grow up. It is www.patreon.com/PolititeenPodcast. No, I'm just kidding, you guys. But definitely visit www.PolititeenPodcast.com. For more amazing content from myself, Damien, our team, our amazing artwork head, and our sponsors over at Polititeen. And once again, thank you so much for watching today's episode. Thank you to my co-host, Damien Galvin, for an amazing conversation, my friend. I do appreciate your input, as always. And that said, have a great rest of your weekend. Chime in for the next episode, and we hope you enjoyed today's conversation.